And welcome back to Coast with Charles Cassidy Jr. with us and your phone calls, and we'll get right to both of you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Charles Cassidy Jr. with us. We're going to get to your calls this hour as well. Charles, tell me a little bit about tonight being or close to St. John's Eve. What does that mean?
Yes, okay. This is from out of the Paranormal Mississippi River catalog. There may be Great Lakes communities that also mark St. John's Eve, but it has a special place in the hearts of the voodoo community. In the voodoo religion, I do refer to it as a religion in my book, and so always respectfully capitalize it. St. John, John the Baptist, is regarded as a very important person, perhaps for the it may be even more relevant that St. John's Eve is taken generally to be the night before the summer solstice. In either case, it became the night, the calendar occasion for the greatest number of prominent voodoo-oriented rituals and celebrations in old New Orleans. Back, whole books can be written about this and have been. I pulled from them extensively. You would have thousands and thousands of tourists, essentially, and wealthy white residents of New Orleans just boarding trains to go to Bayou St. John and watch the voodooists perform. A lot of that back in the old day was kind of more of a tourist thing. Members of the voodoo community knew that the whites would pay a lot to be fascinated and titillated by the rituals, and supposedly for a price you could see the more exclusive, quote, real voodoo rituals, always for a price. But St. John's Eve is important in several religions, and also in another little facet of Deep South culture that's largely underappreciated, the werewolves. The Cajun Loup Garou, also known as Rue Garou, supposedly they will hold their annual convention on St. John's Eve in a location that I do not wish to disclose on the air, just because I don't know that you've read any disclaimers.
Right.
People, okay. Listeners to the show who are devoured are not, the Premier Radio Networks cannot be liable.
We do not want them devoured, that's for sure.
No. But I do, just searching online, I find that several communities in Louisiana do give their own Rue Garou balls, Rue Garou festival, complete with marathon runs through monster-strewn obstacle courses. And they have lots of fun with it. I just happen to notice that absolutely none of those festivals do fall on St. John's Eve itself. So,
all right, to the phones we go for you. Let's go to Cameron in Mesa, Arizona to get things started. Hi, Cameron. Go ahead.
Hey.
Hi, good to have you with us.
Hey, great. Hey, I actually wanted to ask you if you guys know about the skinwalkers out here in Arizona, actually.
Oh, yes. Many stories of the skinwalkers. I don't know if you touched on anything like that in any of your research, Charles, but spooky stuff.
To the extent that they are associated with werewolf tradition, which overlaps with the Loup Garou and the Rue Garou, some similar things have recorded from Bayou country, but even there, it's very ambiguous. I'm probably not answering your question too well, but let's just say that the Cajun Loup Garou, the original French tradition of the werewolf, lot different from the skinwalker. In fact, the Loup Garou may just be the whole idea of a lone wolf serial killer, which got badly mistranslated in the vernacular.
Charles, would you admit that there are just a lot of weird things going on this planet?
Oh, yes, all the time. And also weird movies that inspire the weird myths. That's true. I am intrigued, though, that the emergence of the skinwalker reports did not strike me particularly as coinciding with with any particular pop culture influence. I could be wrong. It could derive from some novels or anything, but it's quite distinct from the werewolves and shapeshifters we see, for example, in the Twilight movies, where they're all
big difference.
Yes, all very sexy and everything. The skinwalkers sound like rather ghoulish characters who no one would want to date.
Well, remember Nosferatu, one of the original Dracula movies?
Oh, yes.
How hideous could you get?
Exactly, and also, but very faithful to the original idea of a vampire as a revenant corpse. No one ever said these things were good-looking until really the 20th century, and they started making movies about them, and some women found Bela Lugosi and Christopher Lee and especially Frank Langella. And Dark Shadows. Let us not that was probably the real breakthrough with the romantic vampire, ages and ages away from that that real rat-faced creature in Nosferatu.
In Bowling Green, Ohio, Jeff is a first-time caller. Welcome to the program, Jeff. Good to have you with us.
Good evening.
Hi.
Hello. I'm calling from the area that used to be the Great Black Swamp, and I know personally two people who have had some kind of connection to Bigfoot sightings in the area, and I was wondering if either of you have ever heard of anything to that extent or anything in regards to a werewolf type creature. In looking for information online regarding the Bigfoot sightings in the area, I came across something about a wolfman type thing in Defiance, Ohio, back in the 70s. Have either of you heard anything about either of those?
This came up as a more or less a footnote in Cleveland Ghosts that there was a tradition. I think someone made a link to the Defiance sighting that in Cleveland, not far from the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo, a world-class institution there. Somebody saw a hairy creature lurking around in a storm drain and caused quite a sensation. You know, did one of the exhibits escape? Or do we have some kind of a creature on our hands? Strangely enough, the local newspaper did print it up as a werewolf sighting as opposed to a Sasquatch sighting, which I don't know if that was the reporter's sense of humor or they just were insufficiently enlightened to the paranormal. I don't, again, know the details of the Defiance case, but it does seem that the big furry guys were really out and about in the early 70s. George, I'm sure you remember Momo, the Missouri Monster.
Sure do. Yep. We don't get a lot of Momo reports anymore, do we? Not a lot.
No, and the fact that at least in the reports I read, he would occasionally be heard, you know, speaking to people, asking for a cup of coffee, things like that, open up my mind to the possibility it could have been a person in a suit. But then again, that was extremely strange, the whole thing.
People are seeing something, Charles. There's no doubt in my mind with regards to Bigfoot. They are seeing a creature of some type. What is it? A bear, a monkey, a half-human, half-ape, who knows? But people are seeing something. I'm convinced of that.
Yes, the reports do seem to come in rather stubbornly. That is a question. I admit to being more confused about Bigfoot after 30 years of reading about him than I was when I started out.
Terry is in Oklahoma City. Hey, Terry, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I have a question for both you and your guest. I lived in Dallas for many, many, many years, and I was just wondering if either of you heard the story about the Lady of White Rock Lake.
The Lady of White Rock Lake. That sounds like a similar myth, Charles, to what you've been doing.
Perhaps. Elaborate, please. No, I have not heard this one.
Well, it supposedly happened, I think, if I remember correctly, back in the 20s. She was boating on the lake, I guess, with her boyfriend or husband or whatever. Anyway, she fell in the lake and she drowned. And the story is that, you know, if you drive around the lake on certain nights, she stands on the side of the road and she says, "I'm injured. I need a ride home." Then, you know, the person, you know, lets her in the car. She gets in the car and gives her, you know, gives them the address. And then they take her to the address. And when they get there, you know, there's nothing in the car except for like a wet area where she was sitting in the car.
Oh yeah, this is like three urban legends knitted together: the vanishing hitchhiker, the La Llorona, and also one called that Professor Runvan calls the nun in the back seat. Basically, is someone who, you know, gets in the car, often uttering a prophecy. Before the driver turns around and sees that no one is there. Yes, the Lady of White Rock Lake. It sounds like as they say in Louisiana, a gumbo of three existing legends.
Yeah, it's a strange story, you know, has to do with drowning in the White Rock Lake and everything else, and that myth, whatever it is, has been around for a long time in the Dallas area. It's probably one of the greatest Dallas stories out there.
Okay. I'm afraid Dallas is not an area of my expertise, but the motifs
are... It's away
are...
from the lakes. It's not by the lake for you.
Okay. I assume there's no swimming.
Let us go next to San Diego, California. Lisa's with us. Hello, Lisa. Thanks for holding, and you are up.
Hi. I have a couple of questions, actually. I was starting with the hag, and I wanted to know how it was related to kind of our mass consciousness of creating these things without knowing that another person has ever heard of it or felt it before. Because,
sure.
Because the hag, I have known in a couple of men friends of mine, lives, really not mine. The only experience I had was one time when I was moving out of an apartment, somebody I knew was cleaning the carpet, and there was a scream. As you know, carpet cleaning can be really loud, and above the carpet cleaning, there was this scream between the two of us. We looked at each other like, what the heck was that? Because it was so loud. It was nothing. It wasn't the machine. It wasn't anything else. And I'd known that darkness in that apartment before, but it just was so loud. And before that, he had experienced somebody stepping on the bed, like he thought it was my cat. And I also, my boyfriend right now, he's had that experience too, where he said that somebody was stepping on the bed where he was and then felt like he was being smothered.
Yeah, that's it. That's that syndrome.
Yeah, I just wondered about that. And then the link between the fact that my boyfriend now has had no experience whatsoever with anybody telling him about the hag, yet he experienced this exact same thing as somebody that I knew before.
Charles, have you heard of the old hag syndrome?
Oh, yes, very, very much so. There are some who will say it will give it as a bulk explanation for the whole spectrum of alien abduction and ghost encounters. That's probably a little too broad. In fact, I understand it's not entirely understood itself as a state between sleeping and waking, where some authors, I think notably Jerome Clark, has said it practically constitutes an occult phenomenon all by itself. Just the fact that neurologists have put a label on it doesn't necessarily mean we know
right
all about it. But what got to me is the caller said something about having a sense of darkness about the apartment, the locality where this took place. That kind of interesting. That stuck a chord in me. I was hearing some local ghost stories, I think, when I was compiling Cleveland Ghosts or my tour for Cleveland Ghosts. And the most wonderful phrase came up from the witness. It said that they had lived in a haunted house, and every once in a while they just had to move out of their regular bedroom. As they put it, the room was having a bad night.
And for those who aren't aware of what the old hag syndrome is, people reportedly are being smothered. They feel pressure on their chest from an old hag, this gray-haired, old hag-looking person who tries to just take the living daylights out of you. A lot of times, Charles, we've heard that children who have had this happen grow up to be sickly. That's a strange
interesting
thing. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, that's a right. Definitely something that should call for more study, and something that I would think maybe the sleep apnea labs would be in a good position to look into it.
Lauren in Bradenton, Florida. Hello, Lauren. Thank you for calling, and you are on the air with us. Oh. Go ahead.
Hi, it's Lauren. Thank you, sir. Mr. Norrie, I'd like to tell you this is a wonderful show. I'm a Coast Insider and
thank you.
United States Army. Hoo-yah! And Mr. Cassidy, I'd like to know if you've ever been to St. Augustine. That is Ghost Grand Central down here in Florida. That place
yes,
is covered in everything. I'd like to hear your remarks on that.
Regrettably, I have not. Strangely, my studies in St. Augustine mostly have to do with the alleged possible giant octopus that you had washed up there. And I do believe it was the early part of the 20th century, and they're still somewhat arguing over whether it was, in fact, possibly the largest octopi on record or just the head of a sperm whale.
One of the classics out there is The Girl in the Lighthouse.
Oh, lighthouses.
And that's a great story.
From St. Augustine.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
okay.
It sure is.
I'll have to look into that. My inventory of haunted lighthouses was restricted to the Great Lakes, unfortunately.
Or another one, the ghost on the swing set, and things like that. Charles, give out your website, if you would.
Okay. It is my publisher's website, www.schifferbooks.com, schifferbooks.com, and you will find that they have an entire spectrum of books on this, paranormal, alternative thinking, mind, body, and spirit, and many of them not written by me, which makes it all the richer. And so I say go for it. They maintain catalogs that you can order by calling. Can I give you a phone number?
Yeah, you sure can.
During business hours, sorry, not man 24 hours, area code 610-593-1777. That's Eastern Standard Time. Schiffer Books in Atlin, Pennsylvania.
Why don't you give it out one more time?
610-593-1777.
All right, Charles, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, and we're going to take final phone calls with you as we talk about all things paranormal. I will have open lines next hour, so those of you get ready for that as well. And if some of you don't get on when we come right back, maybe your story would fit the open lines. We'll be back in a moment. Well, it's time for our shout out. Those of you listening to Coast on our more than 570 radio station affiliates across North America, hello, Coast Insiders. Thank you. And XM Talk Channel 104. How about the various chat rooms out there? Into Infinity, Fantastic Forum 2, Imaginative World, Sorcery IRC, those who follow us on Facebook and Twitter, Yahoo Chat, the Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, the SoCal UFO Meetup Group, the Hollywood Ghost Hunters, and our buddy Greg the Cook in St. Louis. Thanks for supporting Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Charles Cassidy with us. Charles, tell me a little bit about Professor Robert Morris, and you met him at Syracuse.
Yes. Well, we mentioned Dr. Harley Rutledge. I suppose if I have any of the angels of science on my shoulders while I delve into these very strange realms, Dr. Morris would be another one. He was a parapsychologist, the first person to hold the Arthur Kessler Chair in Parapsychology endowed at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. He held that until his death in 2004. like Dr. Rutledge, Robert Morris was just a very serious researcher in these in this field of parapsychology. He would set up experiments that even the skeptics would commend him on his methodology and his care. He would, for example, try to discern, as computer technology evolved over time — this is the time frame in which I attended Syracuse University — he would tell the information science staff to watch out for anyone who seems to be affecting the equipment in some way that causes this. Their mere presence might cause a systems crash, because that might be a sign of something. These are extremely sensitive circuits. They may pick up on something in the human mind that we don't yet understand. He would talk to the behavioral psychologist faculty who are dealing in communications disorders in children, and telling them to look for some way in which perhaps deaf children are seeming to understand each other's thoughts without oral communication. I don't think I have the impression the others there didn't quite get him, but he certainly did a lot of very careful, good work, and was rewarded with the leading for the Kessler chair. And we had some good conversations. Even in my only brief meeting with James Randi, autographed one of his books for me. I don't think he would have done that if he'd known what kind of books I would go on to write.
No, probably not.
James Randi, I mentioned Robert Morris, and Randi said he's, you know, far too good a scientist to be wasting his time with parapsychology, which, coming from James Randi, that's like a Nobel Prize nomination.
All right, back to final calls. Julie in Wichita, Kansas. Hello, Julie, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
I sure can. Loud and clear.
All right. How are you?
I'm good.
All right. Hey, I had a situation when I was a little kid. And it was, I was in the bathroom, and I was looking at my window, and there was a shadow at the window. And I whipped around, and I went out to the sliding glass doors in the dining room area and looked out, and it was, he had a cape, and he didn't have any feet really to speak of, but he was just traveling around. And I was just wondering, have you heard of anything like that? Like, anything like that at all?
I have not. How about you, Charles?
You say no feet were visible, sort of levitating above the floor?
Exactly. And the cape that he had on was flowing not like in our like wind or anything like that. It had its own thing. It just looked at the window. And when I was listening to the show a while back, it was like a shadow person. But when I looked on the internet and I went through them, I said, whoa, wait a minute. It's not a shadow. You know, it's not a, they say it was a time traveler. And it was said on the internet that it was like, if you've been alien, if you had alien, had any alien transplant, transplant or that kind of facsimile, it was more like they're checking on where you're going and that kind of thing. It was more of a alien implant type of thing.
Well, there's a lot of cases like that, and we lost Dr. Roger Lear, who was an expert in that. That's tragedy. You know, in the field of ufology, Charles, we're losing a lot of great researchers just to age and disease.
That's true. I do have faith that some of the young folks, Nick Redfern and especially, are coming up and carrying on the torch. And then this show does a lot of help, too. I was struck, though, by the detail of the missing body parts on the apparition. That comes up in ghost stories quite often. In Paranormal Mississippi River, I mentioned the Minnesota family who welcome a couple of house guests in for a card game. And the wife notices that in the course of the card game, the two men are slowly vanishing from the boots upwards until at the end of the game they just get up to leave and then completely disappear. This story was allegedly passed down in a private family archive, and who knows? That's a strange world.
We've gotten calls of Roman centurions. You know, people would see them marching, but without legs. They kind of like fade away.
Right. A possible one explanation I've heard given for that, not so much fading away as the level of the ground has changed over time. So it's like if this is something of an echo of the past, their extremities literally don't know what time frame to be in because the road isn't where it used to be. But these card players in Minnesota, they were allegedly interacting with the family. Don't know who won the card game. Might have had something to do with it. Maybe they just couldn't afford to pay up.
That could be, too. Carmen is in Dothan, Alabama, and you're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Carmen. Go ahead.
Okay. My grandfather come to me to see my son. I know it was him because I just felt the presence. Like I said, we were really tight. I was raised up, our church going little girl, and he was my best friend for forever and a day. And when he passed away, it killed me. So when my son was born, I was laying in my bed one night. My husband, he works out of town, does sheetrock, and it was just me and my son, Terry, and he was there. And I guess it was probably, I would say, a good 15 to 20 seconds that the, like, time stood still. You could actually feel time standing still, and my grandfather was there. On a second scenario, real quick, in 2008, I was living off in Ashford, Alabama, which is about 30 minutes to 45 minutes from Dothan. And I was living in a trailer with an ex-former boyfriend of mine, and his mom had passed away in that trailer in the back bedroom. She had died of a massive heart attack. Well, the room that we happened to be sleeping in, me and the current person I was with, the door didn't shut. You had to keep it propped like a boot or something. And there was two kids named Britt and Cody. And the door had come open. And I thought one of the babies had got up. So I went to go check in the living room. And I've never, unfortunately, I didn't get to meet Miss Kathy Jackson. She had passed away before I got to meet her until that evening. She was sitting at the head of the table, almost just as plain as day. I could visually see she had, like, the long hair. She was just there. So I believe in paranormal activity, and I believe in angels, and I believe in guardian angels. I've had two experiences in my life that has, the first one made me see, and the second one was just out of the blue. Unfortunately, a few years down the road, her husband, Wallace Jackson, also died in that house, yes, in the kitchen floor. So just to let people know, we're not all alone.
No, not at all. You got to get out of those houses. That's for sure.
Did the children in the room also see the same thing you did?
Let's see where she is.
Which is the baby. Miss Kathy gave birth to Cody. She had passed away, like, he wasn't even a year old.
Oh, but so the child was too young.
As you said, I thought his mother ever left that child. I think that she stayed, and to this day, I quote unquote, there's nothing bad about the house. I think that she's with that child. Yes, sir. I really do believe that little boy Cody seen his mom more frequently than we did from time to time. It was just, Cody. Hmm. Yeah, he was mighty small when Miss Kathy passed away, and he was always a loner. I'd always go check on it, but he would be in a corner or in his room just talking, sweetie, just talking to his mom. So, you know, kids can see things more than adults can, because I guess the little old minds are just so, you know, not so closed like we are. They're just so opened. And that little boy, I really believe he's seen his mom a lot. I seen her once, and it kind of just startled me because I was the only female in the house. You know, Wallace slept at the other end of the trailer, and then there was me and Cody and Brent, and then my two was on the couch. And I was the only one up, but that little old Cody, you know, when I turned around, I think that baby seen his mom a lot more than we
all.
Well,
you know, something about kids, Charles, they tend to see these apparitions.
Yes.
Way more than adults.
I find those stories compelling. The kids, you think their minds are not yet influenced by media, dramatizations. They don't know. They're not looking for book deals or anything like that. I don't deliberately set out in my writing to really frighten anyone, I don't think, as I tell these stories. But the one story in Paranormal Mississippi River that really spooked me, very simple. I'm discussing the King's Tavern in Natchez, a place with a very bloody, violent history. Lots of bad people, bad guys, passed through its gates, including one who once supposedly murdered a crying child just so he could get some sleep. And a little girl is in the bar. No one else is there but her parent, and the girl says that there's a man in the mirror behind the bar.
Oh,
the man has a red hat on. He is not a nice man.
In the mirror.
That I had to turn the lights on as I was writing.
Well,
that.
Did you hear the story of the little boy in the Golan Heights? And he was 3 years old, told his parents that somebody had killed him with an axe. And he had a scar on his head, pretty long scar on his head. And they kept saying, "What do you mean?" And they said, he said, "Yeah, mommy, somebody killed me with an axe." Well, he led them to his skeleton body, and sure enough, there was an axe slice in the head. And it was then they found the axe, and then the little boy said, "I know who killed me, let's go." And they, you know, not too far away, went to the home of somebody in the Golan Heights, and the little boy confronted him and said, "You killed me."
No.
With an axe, and the guy shaking, saying, "You're nuts, get away from me." Then the cops stepped in. They were like on the side of the door and said, "We found the skeleton. We found the axe." The guy admitted to it. He broke down and cried.
Oh, is this a matter of public record?
Yeah, can find that. You can Google
Wow. That's amazing.
Yep. Let's go next to Joe in San Antonio, Texas. Hi, Joe. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. I grew up in St. Louis, and it was back in the late 70s. Mm-hmm. Me and a friend of mine, we were about 13. We were walking, it was at night, probably about 9-10 o'clock at night, under a huge oak tree, and suddenly saw like a white disc. It was almost like a reverse shadow that zipped right between us. And I said, "Did you see that?" And he said, "See what?" And I said, the white disc. And he goes, "Yeah." And then we just talked about it for a while, but we've never talked about that with anybody else. It was the strangest thing. Never heard anything else like that. We were reading a book on fairies at the time, so we kind of wondered if it had something to do with that. But
longtime favorite movie, Charles, that had to do with the supernatural. Mine, It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay.
How about you?
I was just in terms of a film that is not really operating on an agenda to dazzle you with special effects and anything, just presents the story as it was. A 1981 British television movie called Miss Morrison's Ghosts.
I remember.
You remember that? The true story of the two women from Oxford who were sort of like breaking the gender barrier as professors there, and happened to be touring Versailles in France, and either saw the ghosts or they passed through a time warp and saw Versailles as it was on the eve of the French Revolution. And it's not a movie about gotcha or special effects or anything. It's just about movie about some people to whom something extraordinary happens and how they deal with it.
Let's go to Frank in Denver, Colorado. Get you in here, Frank, before the top of the hour. Go ahead.
Hello. I met an alien who was a walk-in, and he took over a U.S. vet that was killed, and it was a strange experience, but he could actually change his face, and it was pretty... I don't know how to describe it, but it scared the dickens out of me.
Gotta be frank. He morphed. He morphed. His whole persona morphed, didn't it?
Well, his eyes got real big, like twice as big, and he did that three times just to prove to me. And then I talked to him about it because we had become friends, and he says, "I don't know for sure where I'm from, but I'm here from another planet to help humanity transform their whole society."
Did he ever do that?
Do what?
Transform humanity.
Well, it's an ongoing process. We are evolving. We are kind of evolving spiritual beings that inhabit these physical bodies on Earth, and so it's kind of a evolutionary process of mankind.
Well, I got to tell you, as far-fetched as some things sound, Charles, I'm not ruling anything out these days. How about you?
Yeah, my main when I confront extraordinary claims, my first question is, you know, is this tied in with an upcoming major motion picture? Because then sometimes that doesn't pass the
test. They are good promoters. Good luck with your book, Great Lakes Folklore. I'll come back with Open Lines next on Coast to Coast.